ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Lots to get to today. There's things happening in the NFL. Our divisional preview continues as we take a look a little bit later at the NFC West. A couple of great guests for you as well. Adam Ronis will be joining us a little bit later, host of the Fantasy Life on Sirius XM. We'll get his thoughts on all the fantasy stuff you need to know, his Dub Club 2, where he kills it. And then Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports will be joining us. He hands out winners in his August. And, of course, college football. This is college football tonight, baby. Love some college football and some college football coming up tonight. So plenty to get to. First and foremost, though, we'll start with the Texans. The question that I have for you guys, are the Texans on the doorstep? And we know what the doorstep is. We all know that. Are the Texans on the doorstep? What say you, Blankers?
It's an interesting terminology, the doorstep. They're close. I don't think that they're on that first tier. I think they're knocking on the door of that first tier, but I think that there's still some teams in the AFC, and we know that Baltimore's been their daddy. I just feel like until that they can prove that they can beat the two teams that they've struggled with in the past, the Chiefs last year, and then obviously the Ravens I mentioned, that I think that they're a tier below those two teams in particular. So I would say close, but no cigar.
How would you define that, like doorstep?
I think that they are division champs. I think that they are – they might need a little help. I just think that we don't know what we don't know about this year with the offensive line and some of the things that they've clearly tried to upgrade or change. But overall, you know that Baltimore might be as talented or more talented than they were a year ago, adding Jaire Alexander as another corner to an already really good defense and trying to add to their offense and returning the guys that they have. So they're not – I don't think they've taken a step back. I think the Chiefs possibly could be considered a team that's tinkering on maybe kind of joining the Texans on a level below, but until Baltimore or somebody knocks them off their throne, I can't do that. So I think that – They made a lot of changes offensively to get better. They have done a lot of things, but the biggest question mark we had going in was the offensive line, and I don't know that they've done anything until we see it in the regular season to change that.
No, yeah, I think the doorstep for me means that, like, you're right on the cusp. Like, yeah, you're a play or two away from winning it all. I'm with you. Like, the terminology to me, not quite the doorstep. I do think that they're a dark horse Super Bowl contender. Like, I think if a lot of things break right, I could see them being able to win it all. I wouldn't put them at the doorstep, though. They're more like parking on the street. You know, like, they still got a little bit to go. They got to walk up the what'd you call it? It wouldn't be the sidewalk, would it? What's the little thing that you walk to the front door? The walkway?
Yeah,
would it be the walkway?
The front walk.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what you would call that. I've never really thought about that. But no, they're like parking at the street. They're not right there at the doorstep. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I don't like the terminology doorstep because I don't think the Texans are on it. Like, to me, if you're going to talk about who's that team on the doorstep, who's right there with a chance to win a title, who hasn't won one yet, but they're really close. To me, that's the Bills. That's the Ravens. They made, you know, multiple AFC championship games. I mean, Josh Allen obviously came, that especially that one year, although that one wasn't in the AFC championship, I don't believe, but came very close. We all know what happened in overtime in that epic shootout they had. Like, the Bills and the Ravens are on the doorstep. They've been nearly there, but haven't broken through. Maybe you can even say that about the Bengals as well, who got to the Super Bowl, but lost to the Rams. Like, the Texans, they've consistently got their ass kicked by the Ravens. They've played competitively with the Chiefs, but they're not beating them. Like, to say that they're on the doorstep, I think, is a pretty far stretch.
What's the furthest you'd be willing to go?
I would say I liked your term, dark horse contender. Like, they're not the first tier. They're not the Chiefs. They're not that next tier with the Bills and the Ravens. And I think they might even be either even or a slight step behind the Bengals. But I think they fall into division winner, dark horse. If things get lucky and break the right way, they could sneak through. But I could not go as far as to say they're on the doorstep.
See, that's a question I was going to ask you guys. Like, Cincinnati is a team that we know is hyper-talented offensively, but we know that they look like that they are really struggling and they don't have a whole lot on defense. So who's a better team right now in your mind, the Texans or the Bengals? Because I think that the more complete team is the Texans. The problem being is that we don't know how this offensive line is going to perform. So as bad as the Bengals' defense looks, we still have to assume that this offensive line is what it is and what it was last year until we see differently.
I think we overrate the Bengals a little bit. I'm on your side on this. I was having the same thought. Prolific offense, obviously.
Yes.
One of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, obviously. Some would say better than Drew Brees. The best wide receiver tandem in the NFL, the best wide receiver. I like Chase Brown a little bit too. Their defense has a lot of issues. I think they're right there on the same tier as the Texans. I look at the Bengals more as a dark horse Super Bowl contender, and maybe they're not a dark horse because they're well known and they have cachet and they've been there before and are pretty close to winning a Super Bowl. But I'm with you. Like, I don't think they're a very complete team. I think their defense is so bad that I wouldn't eliminate them because I could see them lifting the Lombardi.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they have like equal chances to the Texans if I were handicapping it myself.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the reasons that you could at least give them that like you said, the dark horse possibilities is because they've Burrow and Chase and a lot of their key players have been there. They've at least gotten there before. But that defense is just so Swiss cheesy and so full of holes, no matter what they did to finally get Hendrickson under contract. I can't believe in them, as opposed to looking at the Texans going, well, they got all the skill positions pretty much covered. Of course, we're dealing with the running back. We've already talked about that. But I still think that they're very talented in all their skill positions. I think they're going to the top three to top five defenses in this league. And I think that they have the quarterback, the coach, and the coaching staff now. But again, even from a coaching perspective, I love everything I'm hearing and everybody that's giving us feedback on not only Cole Popovich, but Kaylee in particular, and what they're going to be that they haven't been in the past offensively. But until I see it, I can't sit there and go, well, I'm penciling them in on the same tier as everybody behind Kansas City.
Hey, I'm with you on that. Cal McNair, Hannah McNair, they had some quotes in this DJ Bienemy article on ESPN, ESPN.com. Cal believed that Houston was a ways away following the loss to Baltimore a couple of years ago. But last year, after playing more competitively against Kansas City, he says he felt they were on the doorstep. So that's where the phrasing comes from. Cal says what makes us feel good is the past 2 years we've had good results, and we're expecting hopefully that these roster and offseason decisions turn into something along those lines, as we hope to see us get a little bit better this year. And then Hannah McNair, with a little bit of a smile and a little bit of starlight in her eye, said a lot better. So are the Texans on the doorstep? This triggers you, huh, Brian? These comments from Cal?
Yeah, it's just I'm tired of hearing this. I mean, this is year 24 of the team. They've never been past the second round. Like, this goes back to, if I think long-term Texans fans remember, when the Texans faced the Ravens, I believe it was on a Monday Night Football, like 2008, maybe 2009 season. And they got behind, they battled back, took the Ravens to overtime, but then lost on like a pick six. And Cal's father, Bob McNair, went on TV, told Houston and told the commentator that was hosting it, but basically told them that he went to the owners' meetings and that everyone was patting on the back and congratulating him on, man, your team showed fight in that loss against the Ravens at home on primetime. It just feels like they've forever, basically the entire existence of the franchise, celebrated doing a little bit, but not very much, right? Like, this feels like another thing of, well, we're on the doorstep. To me, like, if all you can do is lose by 9 in the divisional round, and that's what we're celebrating as being close, like, I just think it's another example of the Texans sometimes in their words and phrasing coming off as small time.
Well, but I think that what else is an owner supposed to say, right? I mean,
fair.
I think short of the fact that you don't want a Jerry Jones-type owner that is also the general manager, that also is like way over the top opinionated on everything that happens with the team, or Dan Snyder in the past, or guys like that. There's still other guys in the league like that. You have to pump up your team. You have to say the positive things, and you have to believe, because you want to overhype the hope so that you sell tickets and you do things that help the fan base believe. But overall, I don't think that either one of them are on the football side on a daily basis, or even Hannah's comment of way better, whatever she said.
Well, I liked Hannah's comment more than Cal, because Hannah, I think, acknowledges what I'm saying. Like, the messaging from Cal is like, our expectations for this team are to make the Super Bowl. We realize we've never even got to an AFC title game. Our expectations are there and beyond. Like, that comment would have been fine to me, but like, we're on the doorstep. I'm encouraged. It just feels like more of the awestruck personality that this franchise has had since 2002.
I think you have to consider the source, too. I mean, as long as it's Cal, you expect the Tommy Boy type response of, well, we're there. Our team, and we're going to knock the door down this year. And you're like, well, okay, but that might be the door to the garage.
I always try to think of what I would say as an owner in these instances, in these situations. Like, I don't think I would use the we're close or on the doorstep. Like, I don't think I would talk like that. I think I'd be like, hey, we're trying to get better. Like, hey, we're trying to do everything we can to be better each and every day. Like, I think I'd be super cliche. I probably wouldn't say like, this is kind of milestone-y, right? Like, we're on the doorstep. We're on the cusp. We're right there. Oh, we're all shucks. We're trying to get a little bit better. I think I would err on the Craig Biggio, we're taking it one day at a time, like the Nick Caserio way. I think that's how I would be.
That's what I was going to say. This is where, as an owner, you want to kind of play the anti-Dana Brown card. You don't want to pigeonhole or put extra pressure on your team. You want to say, and almost to the point from what Hannah said, I think we're way better. And you could elaborate a little bit and say, look, I think we're much improved. I think we've kind of done a lot to clear up what was a deficiency last year, and we're excited for what the season brings, and then let the cards fall where that it may. And now you're not kind of putting undue pressure, and maybe even more so with the doorstep comment, of expectations.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Texter, Bengals, Chiefs, Ravens, Bills, Eagles, only team that can beat anyone on any given day. Let's read these texts on the other side. Also, do you think the Texans are better now, right now, than they were a year ago? Like, forget the doorstep thing. How about the other part of that? Where Cal McNair says, you know, we hope to see us get a little better this year. Are they better this year at this time of year, August 28th, 2025? Are they better than they were August 28th, 2024. Lots to get to today. We'll talk about the Stros whenever they finish. Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, Adam Ronis from Fantasy Life on Sirius XM will be joining us too. Lots of college football to talk about. Talk about the other teams that could potentially win it all in the Super Bowl as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line on YouTube at ESPN Houston, TikTok at ESPN975. You can find me there, Jeremy J. Branham. Twitter, ESPN975. The boys, Pac-Man Joel, is Blankers. Brian is at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I'm out of studio today. I'm over here on campus, and the campus already buzzing. I barely made it before the show because there's so much traffic here because the campus is buzzing. Football is back, and you already know where I'm going to be tonight. I'm already here. I'm going to be at TDECU Stadium. Cougars host the SFA Lumberjacks in the Lone Star Stampede. So get those tickets right now. Still time to do it. UHCougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. Act fast. Kickoff in under 4 hours. Going to be a great time, though. Second season of Willie Fritz. Connor Wigman, the new quarterback. An offense that's going to be very good, in my opinion. And a new-look Cougar team that's looking to make some noise. It's going to be a night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, unforgettable moments. You already know that nothing beats the tradition, the pageantry, the roar of the crowd, like the Houston Cougars and the Houston Cougar football game. Tailgate before the game, going to be great. Starts at 4 o'clock. I'm already looking around. There's already some tailgaters out here. U of H partnering with the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo for this game, so two great pillars of the community. But it's going to be a great time for the entire family. Houston Rodeo is going to have the Rodeo Roundup Corral, which features the mini lasso practice, some line dancing. You can find me there. Color Wall and a visit from their mascot, Howdy. Stop by, get your picture taken, and be entered into a raffle for 4 Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo season tickets. The whole thing, the whole kit and caboodle. Plus chances well throughout the game to win tickets to a Rodeo Houston performance. Football season's here. Kickoff tonight in a little under 4 hours, so act quickly. UHCougars.com/tickets. Call 713-GO-COUGS to get those tickets now. Come early, be loud, and wear red.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Brian just knows how to put a smile on my face. Fat Pat, put a smile on my face. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Texter says that the Texans are on the sidewalk looking at the door. Yeah, I think I'm there. Maybe they've gotten out of their car. Maybe they've even taken a step or two away from the car. They're at the sidewalk looking at the house. I think that's fair. I think it's a fair place to put them in this hyperbolic house. I guess it wouldn't be hyper. Proverbial house is the word I'm looking for. They're a second-round exit at best. I mean, that is the course of their franchise history. They've never been past the second round, so you'd be accurate saying that. All right, so are the Texans better today than they were 365 days ago? What do you think, Blankers? Are the Texans better right now than they were 365 days ago?
I will say yes, because I know I keep saying I'm waiting to see what they do in the regular season, but just from a standpoint of everything that we talked about yesterday, everything that we brought up in the past, that CJ did it, he did it on ESPN a couple days ago, he did it previous to this, a lot of people just basically saying, look, from CJ himself getting more control of the offense, being able to audible at the line of scrimmage, the bigger picture is there is a lot more systematically and coaching-wise in place to get this offense to succeed and to succeed consistently. The fact that Kaylee is in doing things that's completely different, it seems, than Slowick. He's working with CJ on giving him the control that he wanted, but he's also running what seems to be a tighter ship with a better and more efficient system in place. That you got rid of an offensive line coach that seemed to basically be a lot less than and very much lacking in a lot of ways, and brought in a guy that for everybody that you hear from is organized and in control of the situation and energized and working with the fact that they revamped the line. So I would say the only big thing that would put everything in question is Mixon's health, because he was so good for this team a year ago. But overall, because they added receivers, you know, they've done everything that they can that they think they could possibly do in the offseason to do the line and the system that the line's going to play differently. And the defense just looks to be, like I said, one of the best in the league. So I think they are better than they were a year ago.
Yeah, I do too. I don't know how you could say they're worse. Stroud's going into year three versus year two. Like, give me a third-year quarterback over a year two quarterback. I do think that they take a drop at running back, but I think they're deeper than they were last year at running back to start the season. Like, you know, who knows what Chubb's going to be? I don't have high hopes on Chubb, but a healthier Pierce and a better scheme, and you traded up for a third round running back. Like, that's some juice in the room you didn't have last year behind Mixon. So I do think they slipped in the running back spot. You know, receiver spot, you still have Nico. Like, Nico is going to be Nico. Don't have Tank, but you added the two guys you mentioned. You had Diggs last year, Kirk, kind of a wash there, and then Diggs got hurt, of course. Your offensive line's less talented, but I think better schemed. I think your offensive coordinator's way better. I wouldn't have said that last year because I was high on Slowick last year. But
we
found out he's binary Bobby. Like, he could make adjustments. He was yes, no, can't figure out anything else or how to adjust. And then the defense is good. Like, I mean, you have a year. You had a young defense with the exception of, like, Danielle Hunter, really. But Danielle Hunter, I don't think, is aging at all. He's, like, anti-aging. And then all these young players got a year better. So I do think that they're more talented. I don't know if it's going to translate more wins and, look, injuries happen, all of that sort of thing. But I think this is a better team today than it was a year ago, for sure.
I tend to agree with you guys. I think the difference is slight to me. I think it's slighter than what you guys believe. I mean, I definitely on defense they've improved. I mean, Kamari Lassiter's in year two, obviously Cam Bullock's in year two, and you, I think, improved the safety room once Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is able to play. So I think the defense is better. On the offensive side, I mean, I think we're putting a lot of eggs in the Nick Kaley basket to say they're better on offense, because on paper, the offensive line did not get better. Maybe the continuity and the team mentality makes this a better unit, but just on paper by talent, I don't think they're better.
But they can't be worse, though. Like, the offensive line cannot be worse.
I mean, it can be equal to. Technically, you can always be worse. You can give up more sacks. You can give up a higher pressure rate.
Do you believe that's going to happen?
I believe it's in play.
Do you believe it's going to happen? Will they give up more sacks than they did last year? Will they have a higher pressure rate than they did last season?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, it's a better line, in my opinion.
I put that more on the OC change. So, I mean,
same.
Yeah. I look, but then obviously you guys mentioned Joe Mixon. There's that. In the wide receiver room, look, I think a lot of Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins, I like those picks, but what we thought we were going into the season last year with Tank and Stephon Diggs, I think is higher expectations than what they have behind Nico this year. I mean, maybe that's a small difference, but I do think higher expectations were had. I mean, we were having conversations about the Texans having 3,000-yard receivers last year. No one's having those conversations this year. Obviously, those were foolish, but that was the conversation being had. So besides Kaylee, though, really the only place on offense where I would say I feel better about them this year than last is what you mentioned about CJ being in year three versus year two. I think he's learned from a lot of the mistakes. You've heard it in what he said, both to the local media and national media. So I think he'll be better in year three than year two.
Okay. I mean, I think you make a great point about the wide receiver room, just simply because of the fact that you had veterans that looked like they were all going to put up numbers. But I think that as the world turns and they kind of move on, when we look at it in retrospect, it obviously didn't end well. No. And Diggs, the injury was inopportune, but basically kind of threw everything, threw a monkey wrench in everything. And then it was how do they kind of retool and recover? And I think that they did their very best, not only with the trade for Kirk, but then to add the two receivers that look like they can contribute pretty much right away. And then I personally didn't see Hutch being that guy to end up being at when they break camp, looking like their third receiver. But I think that it's a deeper room. It might not be all of the stars, but I think that it might be more talented top to bottom. But until we see them play, that's another thing where you just hope they stay healthy. Because I think if they stay healthy at the end of the year because of the injuries a year ago, I think you're going to be in a better position.
Yeah, health is always a factor. They're probably not going to stay healthy, though. Like, I mean, it's the NFL. Like, there's going to be you're going to lose a couple of starters on both sides of the ball throughout the year. That's why depth is paramount. Like, mm-hmm. you need to be deep. You that's why. I mean, last year they couldn't survive two injuries to their wide receiver. They were signing Deontay Johnson. They were picking him up off the waiver wire late in the year, and we all thought they could give him some juice. But he turned out to be, you know, a crybaby and demanded the ball and a diva receiver. Texture, they just don't put as much effort into improving offense. I mean, they spent a lot of draft picks on offense. They used both of their second rounders on offense with Higgins, then Ursary. I mean, you totally revamped your offensive line. You drafted Knoll in the third. You traded for Christian Kirk and are paying him $20 million this year. I don't believe in the Texans didn't put a priority on
traded
offense.
Traded up for Woody Marks.
Yeah. I think they did as much as they possibly could, quite frankly, on the offensive line. Like, they signed the second best left tackle in the market, the top left tackle that hit the market. It's you know, an indicator that good players don't often hit free agency. But the second best left tackle entering free agency and the best tackle that signed with a different team was Cam Robinson. And he's a backup for the Houston Texans, probably. Maybe they trade him. So I think that the Texans were pretty aggressive, actually, at trying to improve this offense.
Yeah, I don't think you can say that. I mean, I just think that the same way that they attacked the defense a year ago, both with the draft and the free agents and everybody they brought in, I think that they really were focused on every bit and piece of this offense, not just the offensive line, but they knew they had to revamp the wide receiver room that I mentioned. I think the Marks addition shows you that they were focused on giving more young depth to a running back room. I don't know how you can say that they didn't focus on the offense this offseason.
Yeah, I think it's a bad take. I think it's being disingenuous. Better this year than last year due to the fact CJ, I believe, is a connoisseur and will clean up whatever imperfections he may have had last year, and hopefully the line will be better, but still not a contender. That's a fair take. I don't think Stroud was as bad as we think last year. I think a lot of the things around Stroud were really bad, and because the quarterback is a position that is dependent on a lot of other things to go right, we look at the overall production like, oh, Stroud was not as good as his rookie year. His stat line wasn't. I still think he was the same player. The Texans better be ready to learn XFL. Ha, ha, ha. That's no longer around. 10 wins, another divisional championship T-shirt at Academy. That's it. No free plugs, Texture. What are you doing, man? Texture, it's going to be like that Forrest Gump scene. We went to the playoffs again. We got 10 wins again. I got an Academy T-shirt again. Come on. Why is Academy?
Is this
the Academy lunch office right now? Like, everybody's spamming us? Texture, 365 years ago, we didn't know what Mixon was going to be throughout the 24 season. season year yet. So I don't think you can truly answer correctly until we see play. That's true. Like, all of this stuff is talk. Like, I heard Stroud was doing the media circuit this week. He was on everybody. Which
same room, different channel. He was in the same room in the same spot, just doing whoever wanted to talk to him.
I think Omar had him in that room for 2 hours, and here you go. You're doing every national hit that's possible. It's kind of weird, actually. Like, I don't really know what the payoff there is. Maybe you're currying favor, and they'll talk about you a little bit, but who cares if they're talking about you? The head coach doesn't want you talking about certain players. So I thought it was kind of fishy, kind of weird. Not fishy. Fishy's not the word. Weird. But he was talking about that too. Like, hey, like, all this right now is talk. Like, we have to go out and play. We have to go out and prove it. And that's about where I'm at too. Is we're a week away from the NFL kicking off.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mentioned about the line. But it goes deeper than that. And again, talk is cheap. So I you have to see so much with this team. But I just think on paper and with the moves they've made, and then what we've heard about the moves they made coaching wise, it sounds like all the dominoes are in place for a better season than a year ago. But until they play, we don't know. I mean, if I think to the first texter's point about CJ, the biggest thing is, and he was with Speaker Siciliano, Andrew Siciliano, with the big speakers, was interviewing him yesterday.
Nice of you.
Huh?
Taking a shot at him.
Yeah, I always do. And he, you know, CJ basically said, I did more of being able to read the defense and audibleize at the line of scrimmage in high school and college than his first 2 years with the Texans. And that is a direct hit on Bobby Slowick, to where hopefully he is, you know, he is what he's done before and more. And that is a big difference maker all in itself.
Yeah. I mean, we've said it a dozen times. Like, this offense has a chance to magnify C.J. Stroud. Like, it has a chance to take off the training wheels, and then he can evolve into that top-five quarterback. It could also expose him. Like, if he's good at it, okay, we got a top-five quarterback on our hands. If he's bad at it, oh, okay. There's a ceiling on what C.J. Stroud's going to be. Now, if I'm predicting it, and I know that you've predicted the same thing, we do expect him to thrive with this offense. But, look, it's in the realm of possibility until they go play that it could go the other way. Keith from L.A., have you seen Ryan Clark's prediction for the Texans? He has y'all playing in the AFC Championship. I think it's in play. I really do. I could see the Texans there. I really could.
Well, it's also what you said. I think that every year we see dominoes fall that we didn't expect with injuries, where we see a team that might have been elite suffer an injury or two, and suddenly they come back to the pack just a little bit, and then a break here, a break there, or one play in a game can absolutely propel you to where you've never been before. So I think it's definitely in play.
If Davis Mills has to play a game, could he put up numbers and get trade value?
Stop trying to trade Davis Mills at this point, because the one thing that you have is at least an experienced quarterback that looks like he also knows the offense and knows what to do enough that, God forbid, if something happens to CJ for a game or two, you have someone that wouldn't crap the bed, because the guy behind him, if you want to trade him, is not ready to be the number two.
To answer the question directly, I think that he could put up numbers. The trading aspect of it is difficult to do because he is in the final year of his contract, and usually that kind of quarterback movement, backup quarterback, elevated to a starter, is usually done in the offseason. Like, the avenue where Davis Mills is traded to me is that the Texans aren't good. Stroud was hurt, and then Mills is playing pretty good, and then, like, a contender has a hurt quarterback that's trading for Mills. So I don't love the scenario of trading Mills. I do think that he could produce. I do think he could play well. And I do think that the reason that they kept Graham Mertz on the 53 is because they're grooming him to be the Davis Mills replacement in a year. I think he'll be the backup quarterback next year. Do y'all think Stroud will try to run the ball more this offseason, or this season, my bad?
I hope not. I hope that it's only because there's nothing else there and he realizes he has enough room to get back to the line of scrimmage, get a couple of yards, and get down or get out of bounds.
Yeah, I don't love the idea of Stroud running a lot. If there's nothing there on a 1st and 10 and you're going to take 4 yards and get out of bounds, cool. If it's a 3rd and 3 and you see the path to pick up the first down, cool, do it. I want him to be opportune, and I don't want him to take any shots. Way too important to be taking any shots. Texture, everyone blames Slowick for CJ's struggles, but no credit for his first-year success. We'll see this year. It's a good counterpoint. It's a fair counterpoint, Texture. The counterpoint to your counterpoint would be that Slowick was really bad at adapting. He's really bad at, like, you know, scheming up with the personnel that he has, kind of round peg, square hole. That would be the counterpoint. Well, but to your point, like, Texture, we will not know until we see it.
Well, and the other thing that goes with what you said is the fact that no one knew what to expect from this offense because there was no tape on it. And they didn't know what to expect because he had never done it before, to where they kind of you know, early on, they had a blueprint that no one had seen. And then, like you said, they had enough talent as well to have that good first year. But then we found out a lot more as time went on. Teams could better prepare for them. They had more tape on them, and they saw who they were.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we won't know until we know. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Does this year define who CJ is? I wouldn't say it defines who he is totally, but I do think it is a defining year. Like, I think that there's a chance, okay, he's, like, pretty good this year, but not great. But then second year under a Kaylee scheme, he could really take off. So I wouldn't call this year a defining year, although I just said that. But it is going to be pretty revealing, I think.
No, I definitely think it means a lot for him financially and otherwise, you know, contractually. And when and what happens with his money, because it's going to go a lot to him being on that level that he's always thought saw himself being on with the other elite quarterbacks in this league. And I think that as a team, as it relates to that, if he is able to take it to the next level with what we've just got done talking about, what they've done to make the team better, I think that hand in hand, it elevates the team and it elevates everything, both from like how he's viewed to what he makes on his contract.
All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Astros just won a dogfight of a series against the Rockies. They win a matinee game tonight, today, 4-3. We'll discuss that on the other side. Astros win a series against the juggernaut Colorado Rockies. We'll discuss this one. 713-780-3776 if you want to join the convo. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word from my good friends at Temperature Pro. I got out of the car here at the station. It was 99 degrees. It ain't getting any cooler anytime soon, no matter what you hear about cool fronts and what temperature it is in the morning. Therefore, you've got to have an AC company that you can lean on if you need them or you want to go to because you want them to check everything that you have out before anything could possibly happen to put you in a predicament. That's why I recommend Temperature Pro, because they have everything that you're looking for in an AC company. They have 20 years of experience, so you check that box, experience. They are trusted and reliable because starting with their reviews, an A-plus with the Better Business Bureau, when you look around, you realize they take care of you before, during, and after the sale. And then you take it from me because I've actually dealt with them, and I've also got them to help my friends, my neighbors, and people that have come to me looking for AC help. And they all rave about what they've gotten from the service and the way that they were taken care of by Temperature Pro. And I'll take it a step further. The owner of the company is someone that I've known my entire life. I grew up with John Blitz back in Wisconsin. He's here in Houston like me, and I'm speaking for him because I'm here to tell you he and his people are going to take care of you every step of the way. They got all the major brands, Train, Carrier, Daikin, Goodman, and Lennox, but they're offering you fantastic financing as well. 12 months, no payments, no interest. You need it fixed now. You might not be able to pay for it now. They're going to take care of it, and that's exactly how. That they're going to take care of everything for you, and then you've got 12 months to figure out how you're going to pay it off. Your AC needs to be in the trusted hands of people you believe in, and that's why I believe in Temperature Pro, and I'm telling you about John Blitz's company. Go to blitzproservices.com right now or call them on an easy-to-remember line, 281-247-5925. That's 281-247-5925. No matter where you are in H-Town, they will come to you, and you can make sure that they will see it through to make sure that AC is back up and running exactly how you want it to.
ESPN 97.5.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before.
And Walker sends one high and deep to left center field. All the way back and gone. Number 21 on the year breaks the tie in the bottom of the eighth. Christian Walker, his second home run of the day.
Shooter.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
What was up with the shooter thing by Bagwell?
Look, I enjoy his appearances, but I'm also thankful that Blummer is coming back in for the next series because at least he got that one right. He jumped, he jumped the gun on about at least four balls last night that he thought were gone, and he does not have a filter when jumping in.
Would you rather have a full season of Blummer or a full season of Bagwell?
Blummer.
713-780-3776.
That's the easiest question you've ever asked.
That's Blummer.
Yeah,
that's... I would go Bagwell.
What?
I like Bagwell. I like listening to Bagwell on the air. I think he is next level with his insight.
You and I are not the same.
His insight is on another planet.
I agree with that. If you could polish him up as a broadcaster, the stuff he gives you, like you said, Jeremy, from his experiences, and then because the players all talk to him, and because he's got that inner foot in the door with the organization, he offers up a lot of nuggets, whether you choose to digest them all or not. And I enjoy, like I said, the delivery makes it tough to listen to for a full 162, but when he does bring stuff to the table, it is valuable.
Like, I hear you on the delivery because he is pretty, like, monotone and dull. Like, I get it. That doesn't bother me so much in baseball. Like, I don't need my color guy to be Dick Vitale. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but every time there's the ball hits the opposite.
He could probably cut that out. Like, I mean, he's not polished, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. He's like, I'm not a pro. I'm just kind of in here. But his insight on the game is phenomenal. Like, it is so good. He called the Yordan home run yesterday. He's like, yeah, he saw a changeup. If he gets another changeup, he's going to hit it out of here. Boom, out of there. He was wrong on the Dahlander breaking stuff, though. All the Astros are on it, and then he, like, dealt. But, no, I like hearing him. It's probably good that it's more of a changeup than anything else.
That's what I said,
but,
yeah.
And he wouldn't want to work that much.
And obviously that he didn't even want to be the hitting coach for more than what he
did. Yeah, it's easier to be a broadcaster,
when he
though.
Did it. But it is. But at the same time, he's made enough money, and he's, you know, set for life to choose what he wants to do. It's a great change of pace. Like, when you get the fill-ins – and it gives you something. It's the variety of giving you a little bit different than what you've gotten for most of the season. I think that's kind of what makes it more enticing.
Yeah. No, I know that's like a huge conversation on the internet. Like, oh, no, get this guy off the broadcast. He's the worst. He's so bad. And, like, I don't think that he should be building a team and building a roster. But, I enjoy the insight of Jeff Bagwell. But the Astros win one today. The Summer of George. He pitched pretty good. He pitched all right. You know, he started off really good. Ended up going 5 2/3, 3 runs, 7 hits. Punched out 8. Walked 1. But gave up a couple of homers. I thought Cam Smith could have robbed one. I think Jesus Sanchez would have. But, I mean, look, it's Jason Alexander. Like, I would take this start every single time. If he's giving up 3 runs and 5 2/3, I'm taking that from Alexander every single start.
No, I'm absolutely with you. Look, you can nitpick it all you want. He was he was one out away from another quality start on a guy that at the start of the season, no one, whether it pencil pen, Sharpie, or otherwise, was penciling him in not only to the rotation, but thinking that at some point this guy that we could all have fun with his name with was going to be a guy this significant to this team, this rotation, and their success. He's been fantastic. He has been one of their best pitchers all season long, and he came in at the right time with a background that made you believe there was nothing to expect but a short visit, and he's become a stable force in your pitching staff.
Yeah, I was pleased with the start. I think it could have been better than it was. I think, yeah, Cam Smith did hose a guy out of the plate, so, you know, it didn't really help him on that. And it's very hard to criticize a player for not robbing a home run. Like, I understand what I'm saying here, but I thought it was a catchable homer. But anyways, throws out the dude at the plate. Astros win anyways. Christian Walker had the big home run. Hit one in the first inning that just snuck down that right field line. Snuck it inside the foul pole. And then ambushed a first pitch fastball in the eighth inning off of Peralta was the difference in the game. Look, you know, people say he. I saw Walker getting criticized on Tuesday because Yordan got walked a couple of times and Walker hit one at, you know, a 910 expected batting average. And people, oh, this guy's a bum. He can't be hitting behind. Christian Walker's been a very good baseball player for about 2.5 months now.
Yep, he really has. I, again, I'm with you. I'm tired of people crapping on him because when you watch what he's doing, the at-bats he's putting together, they're night and day from what we saw when he was scuffling early in the season. He looks like a guy that I can trust, and especially because you've got the reinforcements coming back, and with Yordan now sliding him a little bit down in the lineup, he's a more impactful hitter, and he's probably going to see better pitches when he's sitting right behind the big fella. But at the same time, he looks like a very, very above-average Major League Baseball player at the plate now that you can trust and rely on in the middle of that lineup.
Yeah, so good job there. Jose Altuve, Still not playing left field. Hasn't played left field since July 28th. They gave Jordan the day off. Well-ish. He did have a late inning cameo. Came on and worked a walk and then was lifted for a pinch runner, which I don't mind. I don't need him starting three games in a row. But Jose Altuve was in the lineup again. Like, like, where is he at mentally, health-wise, all that stuff. But he hit a home run in the first inning, too. Snuck one in the Crawford boxes. Really all you did offensively. I would like the Astros to tack on some more runs, though. That would be nice. That would helpful.
Well, and today the biggest thing was this looked like a game that very easily could slide through your fingers when it started out like a game that you looked like you were going to be in complete control of. And for the second straight night, they gave you insurance. They didn't leave it to chance as much because of the fact that they were able to score late today. Last night, the fact that the Jordan bomb and the extra run support really helped for a bullpen that you have to cross your fingers until you get to Abreu normally, or at least recently. So thankfully they got the timely hits when they needed them, and it wasn't ugly, but hey, a win's a win at this point in the season.
Series win is a series win. Yes. Astros now two up on the Mariners. How about Cam Smith getting a hold of one yesterday? I thought of Israel whenever he did. I was like, yeah, there
and
we go.
And then the throw today.
I mean, you sound disgusted when Cam's doing something good.
No, I love it for Cam. I hate it because the Israel recency bias train is going to come chugging through the show by any means necessary to start singing his overwhelming praises again.
So which one's greater to you, Cam doing well or Israel having happiness?
It's a tough discussion, man. I just want Cam to do well. I can live with Israel.
By the sound of your voice, I think the Israel thing is greater.
No, I just, I mean, it's excessive. It's not greater. But I want the kid to do well. He's, for everybody that you hear from, talk to, and when you hear from himself, he looks and feels like a kid that is really a good baseball player and a good person that you're pulling for. I want him to do well.
Yeah, 0-for-4 today. I thought he was going to put together back-to-back games because I have a theory that Cam Smith hits left-handed soft-tossing pitchers pretty well, but it was 0-for-4 today. But it did have the home run yesterday. That was good to see. Fromber pitched well yesterday, too. That was really good, getting him back on track.
Boy, wasn't it. I mean, he pitches really well. I didn't realize it was that good at home, but I think his ERA at home this year is like 172. But he was back to old Fromber last night. I don't care if it was the Rockies or not. The movement on every pitch was there. The command of the each hitter and each count seemed to be there, and that was a at the right place, right time. We needed to see that out of Fromber Valdez, and that was a great start.
Texture, I will take base hits and solo shots any day over walks. I absolutely hate free bases, which have haunted this pitching staff. I hate it, too. I cannot stand free passes. It drives me nuts.
Yeah, you know, it bothers me as well. And the other thing that bothers me right behind counts. That is the 0-2 pitches that see the middle of the plate.
Yeah, I mean, they're not trying to do that.
No, but it's happened way too much this year.
If Brian Abreu was a free agent after this year, how much money years would he command? I have to dig a little bit. I don't know too much about the relief pitcher market and what they signed for. Teams don't really give relief pitchers huge money for a lot of years unless they're a top-of-the-market closer.
Which like, you're what looking at close Chapman to Hader money, right? If Hader's at 19, I got to believe Abreu's maybe a little less than that. And again, you got to prove you can do it for multiple years. So maybe it's a three-year deal. But I got to believe he's 14 to 17 a year.
Yeah, my gut, I mean, Chapman's on an $11 million deal 1 year now. He's obviously older, and he's been on these year-by-year contracts for a while now. My guess would be about 45 for three. That would be my hunch on Abreu. Maybe he gets it up to 60 for four. Maybe. But he's very, very good. I love Jose Abreu. Or Brian Abreu. That's my bad. I don't love Jose Abreu as a baseball player. I love him as a man, but not the baseball player. A texter earlier texted in and said that Abreu is a better closer than Hader. Yeah, I said it. Go Cougs. I don't know if I disagree. He is filthy. He is nasty. I have more trust in Abreu than I do Hader. Like, if you just take the stats away from it, right? Mm-hmm. You take the baseball savant away from it. Your life is on the line. And let's say they go righty-lefty, and they're balanced and all that. So you're not really, like, exposing a pocket with the handedness. Your life on the line. You need to get out of an inning without surrendering a run. You going Brian Abreu, you're going Josh Hader.
I'm going Brian Abreu.
Yeah, I am too.
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you more so than anything else. It's because he locates his secondary pitches and his spin pitches, and I trust him more than Hader. Hader, they can sit a little bit. They're they're really slow, but they really kind of hang a little bit. Whereas Abreu right now with that slider and the complementing that fastball, today his stuff was nasty again.
Yeah, he's filthy. I love that guy. Texture King and Ort did good today. They did. Ort inherited a tough spot, too. Yep. Was able to get out of it. Texture, I love Bagwell and has some awesome knowledge, but every now and then has some strange takes. For example, he didn't like when pitchers and catchers cover their mouth during a mound visit. Yeah, he has some weird nuances. Yeah, I don't really understand that one from Bagwell's point of view, that he's bothered when the catcher and the pitcher cover their mouths.
Yeah, I think he gets kind of like with analytics. I think he gets a little out of touch with everything that's what's going on today with all the technology and the fact that you can read lips. That's kind of par for the course for everybody.
So hot take, I think Bagwell actually likes analytics, but he doesn't realize that he likes analytics. Because yesterday he was asking TK about Fromber and how often he throws a curveball on a 3-2 count. And it's that's analytics, Jeff. Like, you're asking somebody else to give you the analytics.
I know
of what is happening.
Analytics has those things out there. Yeah.
It was painful how long it took to figure out if and or who got to 3,000 hits and didn't have a five hit game.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, but that's a hard thing to pull up quickly. Like, you got to go all-time hitters, and then you got to look at every single one of their game logs. Like, the quickest way to do that is you go, okay, here, go Baseball Reference, all-time career hits, and then you have to start working your way down. And then so, like, Pete Rose would be the top, right? So you click on Pete Rose, and then you have to go look at his year-by-year game log.
I just Googled it, and it came up right away.
What did you Google?
I Googled members of the 3,000-hit club that have not had a five-hit game.
That's not what they were trying to find out, though. They were trying to find out who had the most hits who had never had five hits. No. I guess you could back your way into that.
No, TK initially said, because it was one of his producers gave him the stat like a few weeks ago, that there's only one 3,000-hit club member that had never had a five-hit game. And Baggy was like, oh, who was it? And TK's like, I'll have to go back and look. I don't have it. It's in my notes. And then it just took forever.
Yeah, I thought they were trying to find the guy who had the most hit. I thought it definitely was born there, but I thought it derived
into a
different conversation.
Because then they went to the fact that whether someone was in his ear or not, someone basically told TK, I don't think that we're finding that there is one. And he's like, yeah, we're struggling right now to find one. And then they showed the graphic with Gehrig, and Baggy was like, oh, of course, Lou Gehrig. And then that's what TK said, but I don't think he got the 3,000, and then it kept going.
So what did you find out?
That no one in the 3,000 hit club has done that without having a five hit game,
and that was what your Google AI told you.
Uh-huh.
Didn't they say Stan Musial never did?
I don't know if Stan Musial had 3,000 hits.
He did. He had 3,600, over 3,600.
Okay. Well, I just Googled it right. That's part of my frustration too. I Googled it right away, and they were like, there's never been a player that had 3,000 hits that didn't have at least one five hit game. And then they were, Baggy was saying, well, Jose's going to be the first. He said, Jose's not going to be that guy. He's going to get five hits before he gets to 3,000.
Yeah. Google AI sucks. I don't trust it. I'm going to look into the Stan Musial thing. Cause if Stan Musial has, I mean, Stan Musial has 3,600 hits. If he never had a five hit game, then Google AI, or whatever your browser that you use, it led you astray.
Okay.
Yeah, I found Google AI stinks when it comes to sports stats. Like, they're really, really bad. I have a tough time trusting them at all. But I'll fact check that. Bring in Hader with one run or less. Who knows if we see Hader again? Rocky Bagwell just looks like just likes to look at the back of a baseball card. He does when he's signing players. Search players.
Baseball card.
Search players with five hits, cross-reference it with hit leaders, pretty easy. All right, well, then give us the all-time hit leader that doesn't have five career hits in a game. Texture, Branham, you can use AI for that search. I know that you can, but Google AI, I don't use a whole lot of other AI. I find that they're not good when it comes to sports stats. Like, this could be a classic example. If they told Blankers that Stan Musial that there's never been, and Stan Musial hasn't had a five-hit game, then they would have led him astray. Key from L.A., man, I love Vin Scully. I miss Vin Scully doing Dodger games. Vin Scully was the best. I thought he was the best. Bagwell's like sleeping pills if heroin made it. I love Baggy, but he has to go back to sitting behind the play just watching. Fire playlist, Brian. Seawalk shaves and hits two home runs, including the go-ahead eighth-inning blast. Yeah, big night
Walker
for Seawalk.
Run the base is the second one. I had to look twice going, is that really Christian Walker?
Yeah.
He looked young.
Seawalk. Babyface Seawalk. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. When we come back, Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, he wants to make you some money. So if you like money and you like making it, make sure you stick with us and you catch Lee Sterling on the other side. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. If you like to save some money, you should be shopping at Walmart. Houston, the Walmart you thought you'd use, now knew. Who knew? Did you know that Walmart has more than a half a billion items online? That's right, half a billion items. Find a huge selection online that you can't even find at stores. Do it now at Walmart.com. Branham family loves shopping at Walmart.com. We like to place an order on Sunday, get everything we need for the week. We even add things to our cart during the week. Oh, okay, we ran out of toothpicks. Well, okay, let's just go to Walmart.com, put in our login, add the toothpicks. That way we know it's in our cart for Sunday. Okay, we're out of dishwasher pods. Well, I can do that. We're out of laundry detergent. I can put that in the cart, knowing that we're going to order on Sunday, and then boom, it's there on a Sunday night. It's fantastic. I don't like messing with the crowds. I don't like going out to the store. I don't have a ton of time. I don't want to turn off the game. So we order online with Walmart, and we get all our groceries without having to leave the house. It's fantastic. Oh, I know what you're thinking. It's too expensive, bougie Branham. No, it's cost the same as it does in store. And of course, because it's Walmart, you know that the prices are low. And what I love about it, they're fast. Walmart can deliver in as fast as an hour. Going online at Walmart.com is actually quicker than going to the store, in my opinion. They're going to save you time. Use Express Delivery to get all the eligible things you need, like toothpicks, like laundry detergent, like dishwasher pods, home goods, prescriptions even, and, of course, the groceries. Walmart is changing the game. When it comes to feeding your family, hosting a tailgate, or throwing a party, thank Walmart for all of those grocery needs. So start an order right now at Walmart.com.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.